Thanks for tuning in to the Undercuts review of the 2024 Miami Grand Prix. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen and enjoy the show.
By being a racing driver, you are under risks all the time. By being a racing driver means you are racing with other people. And if you no longer go for a gap that exists, you're no longer a racing driver.
All right, guys, so we are here for the first of three U.S. Grand Prix, the Miami Grand Prix. Sorry to our plentiful listeners for not having a recording last week. I had some tech issues, but we'll talk briefly about China, mostly about, you know, the impact that Joe had coming in. In his first two seasons, he wasn't able to have a home race because of COVID and political things and whatnot, but he was finally able to have it for the last race. And you really saw at the end of the race what it really meant to him. That was really awesome. I've never seen them have like a, what are they, the bullard for a driver that wasn't in the top three on the straight, but the reception that he got was unbelievable. I guess, Nick, you kind of got an inkling of something similar to that when you were in Suzuka with Yuki being the only Japanese driver, but he's had a few. This isn't the first time.
There's been a few Japanese drivers over the years, but no Chinese ones. So it was kind of cool to see that. Obviously, they shouldn't do that for everyone in their home race, but for China, because they've been away for so long and he probably won't have a seat next year, they thought they'd better do something. But yeah, Suzuka, when every time Yuki went by, everyone stood up and cheered. Didn't matter what he was doing. It was like, what, there were 57 laps in the race or something like that. I can't remember. But every time he went by, everyone stood up and cheered at him. So I can only imagine what it was like in China, never having had anyone to cheer for before. So it was good to see.
Can you imagine if anybody did that for Logan? Like, I mean, he gets some cheers, but like, they have such support, right? Like, such support. The entire country is behind those drivers, regardless of what they're doing. And then you have America.
Yeah, I don't know though. My opinion has changed of Logan.
Has it
since Suzuka? Because I don't know if I sent you guys the picture, but my little guy, because we were going in the Williams hospitality, we bought some merch. I bought my little guy a hat. The only Williams merch that could fit him was a Logan Sargeant hat. And we were sitting just inside the, you know, when Ted does his notebook and he got these tents and stuff. And we were sat right by the door of the Williams one. And when Logan came in, he just kind of looked around and saw my little dude with his Logan Sargeant hat on. And he came, he fist bumped him, and we chatted about how my little guy does go-karting, and we took a picture, and it was all very cool. So my 6-year-old is all about Logan, and so I cannot badmouth Logan Sargeant for this race, which may well be his last, if from what we're hearing about Kimi Antonelli potentially coming in for Imola. So we will not speak ill of Logan Sargeant on this podcast. Well, I won't. You can. It's fine.
Yeah, we can do it.
Too
we
many
want.
Like not too many Haas fans either, right? You think Haas is a U.S. team. I didn't think there were too many Haas fans at the race this weekend either. But
nah,
or I mean, most of races in general,
more Sergio most of the, fans than yeah than Haas fans.
Yeah. Yeah, and most of the Haas fans were Gunther fans. So
right. Yeah, and Gunther was there. Gunther's been doing the rounds on the media. He's, you know,
yeah.
I guess when he left his seat at Haas, everyone, I know Formula One was not ready to be Formula One without Gunther, and so. He's doing the rounds, and it's cool. It's good to see him.
Yeah.
I guess to that point, like, does Haas really feel like an American team anymore? Like, when they first arrived, it was like, oh, this is an American team, but
what, without
really not much. They're not
Carolina
even in America.
Droll?
Yeah.
I mean, he lives just up the road, but he's you know.
Yeah. Maybe it doesn't feel like Logan and Danny Ricciardo, two American drivers.
Yeah.
I think they both may well be on the market. So, you know, stranger things have happened.
Yeah. All right. So obviously we had a very busy weekend. This is the second sprint race weekend in a row. And what are there, six all season? And these were the first two of the year. And obviously this, we were talking about Logan, and this is, I guess, the, he has three home races, but he's from Florida. So this is really like his home race. He lives like an hour away from there, not even that far.
Yeah, from Lauderdale. He's from Fort Lauderdale.
So, you know, it's his home race. So I'm sure that he was hoping for, you know, good results coming into this weekend for lots of reasons. But only one practice session. And I guess we should talk about the new format for sprint race weekends. So they have the sprint stuff happens and then the Grand Prix stuff happens. So it wasn't like split up like it was last year with the qualifying for the Grand Prix and then all the sprint stuff and then the Grand Prix race. And they're able to adjust their cars a bit in between
the sprint race and the Grand Prix. It's a little bit weird that they have a race on Saturday morning and then qualify. So they got to kind of reset the logic in their mind about stuff.
Yeah.
But it does mean that they can take their cars out of Parc Fermé and tweak stuff. And I was a little bit apprehensive about that because, you know, we've seen Max just win a sprint race and then just go on and win the Grand Prix. And I was like, well, is that just going to make it easier for him to do that? Because he's really good. They tweak a few stuff and then he's even better. But it's the first couple of sprints weekend, I think it's turned out okay.
Yeah.
I really like it. I like the format a lot. I think it must please the engineers tremendously that they get to have a testing / race session, which must be extremely useful for them to get like real race data. I like it. I like that they're able to tweak it. I hear your concern that it could turn into just the more dominant teams getting even more dominant on Sunday. But as we're seeing,
but I guess it was like last year, engineers only had one session to get their car ready for Grand Prix qualifying. Now they've got three sessions, which makes life a little easier. You do get the somewhat jeopardy, the kind of, you know, anything could happen type thing going on with the sprint, which is good for the sprint. But the Grand Prix, you kind of want the cars to kind of be at their best.
Yeah.
So I think it works out. It is just a little weird on a Saturday to watch a race and then kind of come back a couple of hours later and watch qualifying. But that's my problem to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see throughout the whole season if it ends up working out well. But so far, so good. But let's jump into the action. So the first session with meaning, I guess, was the sprint qualifying session. Bottas had a pretty crazy moment where Oscar was coming in behind him on one of his hot laps, and Bottas's engineer told him at the very last second that there was another car. I think there was a car in front of Oscar that he got out of the way for, but he didn't see Oscar behind that car. Did they come together? It was very, very close. It was
super close, but I don't think they touched. Or they maybe did touch just a glance on the wheel, but that could have been a massive accident.
Yeah, it could have been really bad. And like you said, luckily there was no damage. And you heard Bottas on the radio immediately afterwards say, like, guys, you need to tell me way before that. So,
yeah. Well, one of the stories of this week is obviously Sauber and a couple of things that are going on in the team there. Obviously, they just signed Hülkenberg. But also, they fired Bottas's race engineer and replaced him with someone else. Didn't consult Valtteri at all. And the new guy came in and in the first meaningful session wasn't communicating and almost took him out.
Yeah.
Not good.
Not good. Not a good start.
Did they give a reason to why they changed the race engineer just on how they've done so far this year? Because I feel like that's not their biggest worry so far.
I was going to say someone's got to take the fall for the wheel nut thing, right? I'm not saying it's that guy because it's clearly not that guy, but
right.
Someone's got to take the fall. No, they didn't give any reason, I don't think.
Interesting. I'm sure we'll hear more from that if things keep going the way that they're going for Sauber. But some more big surprises. The Mercedes were not able to get any meaningful times in SQ2 two or any that were good enough for them to get through to the next session, which was not expected. Obviously, they haven't been as good as we've expected from Mercedes, but they've really struggled in qualifying so far this season in a few occasions.
Yeah, I mean, they're struggling all around. They have moments where things look like they might be going the right direction, but what is interesting is they were so locked into being a just a really well-run team and had everything buttoned up with preparation for races during their glory run. And it's surprising that they don't have a lot of change internally, and that seems to have kind of gone away from them. Now, the car could just be that bad and it might just look that way, but it does seem like they've just gotten away from that just, you know, Mercedes machine-like. Everything is accounted for throughout the weekend.
Yeah. And that was really it for spring qualifying, other than Max, you know, taking pole again.
The big story
once again,
sprint qualifying though, on P4, Daniel Ricciardo. Big uptick in form on that front, managed to get his tires working for the quali sessions and set some good laps. So
yeah.
You know, things on the up for Danny. Well, certainly looking on the up for Daniel on Friday evening, heading into the sprint on Saturday.
And he really needed that. I mean, he had been pretty optimistic going into China and felt like his car had pace, but obviously he and Albon had that huge crash.
That was Suzuka. Yeah. China was where
he got
nerfed out by Stroll.
That's right.
So damaged his floor, lifting him, put him into the back of Oscar in front, and so didn't, you know, to that point he looked pretty racy as well.
Yeah,
yeah,
but didn't really get a chance to prove it in the race. So
yeah,
now is his chance.
Yeah, really, really good on him. We haven't seen Danny up there since. What, Monza at McLaren is like the last 2021? Time he's because he's really been anywhere near the top two rows. So that was great to see, and he was smiling all through the pen after that, which was well deserved. So that is it for the sprint qualifying, and then we get to the race. Max had another great jump, and he was pretty aggressive moving over. This is really his style on the start. When he feels like he's under pressure from the guy in P2, he just moves all the way over in front of Charles to the point where he has to kind of back out a little bit, and he's able to take the lead or keep the lead fairly easily. What else did we see on lap one? Obviously, Lewis, this is where we had
as Verstappen moved over, and Charles kind of goes to go around him, it leaves a big old gap up the inside, which Lewis decided was going to be his for the taking.
Yeah. So Lewis did that, and then you had the two Aston Martins on the outside of him with Lando on the outside of the two Aston Martins, and it was just like a domino effect. Lewis goes into Alonso, who goes into Stroll, or whichever way those two were, which goes into Lando, who got damage and was out of the race on lap one of the sprint. Obviously, so I was
setting
not
up to be a terrible weekend for Lando.
Yeah, or so we thought. But Alonso got a puncture on that contact. So in two straight sprint races, he's gotten punctures and has had to pit during the race. So that probably ticked him off, and Danny made up his place on the jump, getting ahead of Checo, going to P3 and maybe getting a podium. But this brought out a safety car. So we had a couple of non-racing laps, I guess. You know, Danny moving up was a big one. Who else made some moves? I think Oscar moved up a bit. No, not really. I guess Danny was really the big one, and Kevin moved up a bunch. Mm. Because he was in the points right behind Nico.
Yeah, I mean, I think that just that section, like between like third and sixth, obviously moved off to the side with Lando's contact, and so that gives an opportunity for a few guys to kind of sneak through, especially once you know, the guys that spun were at the back and had to pit. So you'd see people, you know, Kevin moving up, what, four or five spots. You know, Lewis getting up there a couple of spots as well, even though he
caused it.
Yeah.
So the safety car came back in on lap four, and then lap five, the DRS comes back, and Checo was able to get by Danny fairly easily once he had DRS. And then Lewis was trying to use DRS to get by Kevin. It looked like he might have had him at this first try, but Kevin broke crazy late and was able to stay ahead. I believe this is where he skipped the chicane, was the first instance where they were battling side by side. And, you know, you heard Lewis immediately on the radio saying he left the track and gained an advantage, which he definitely did. But this was just the beginning of their battle during this.
How he got a penalty race for that then.
Yeah, 10 seconds, I believe.
Right.
Which is a lot, because what did he make up by cutting it like half a second? You know?
Yeah, not even.
So wouldn't that count as like part of the all four tires going off track? Shouldn't he have a few of those before he gets a huge penalty? Or is it just in this instance,
gaining the advantage part?
Okay.
If you're just on your own, you get track limits just because you're leaving all four tires off. But if you're racing with someone and you're gaining that advantage, they now say it's a 10 second. I thought it was, I guess they've gone from 5 to 10. They're just trying to.
Yeah. Yeah, they did, because last year drivers just complained that it wasn't enough, which I totally agree.
Yeah. But we've seen from the Haas team specifically that they can, you know, use that penalty to their advantage. That one driver might not be the one that is going to get the points, but they'll still use him on the track.
So you're saying he did it again?
So on lap 11, it looked like Lewis had passed Kevin again, but Kevin broke super late again, which forced them both to go wide. I mean, it didn't really seem like Kevin's instance really caused Lewis to go off, but even if he hadn't gone out wide, he wouldn't have been able to turn in anyway because Kevin was right there going wide.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of Max on Lewis in Brazil in 2021, was it? Mm-hmm. It's just like, I'm not going to make the corner, but I'm just going to slow down at just the right rate that you can't turn, and we're both going to go off, and I'll keep the position.
Yeah.
Nico at Red Bull Ring against Lewis did the same thing, turn one or three or something like that, and he got a penalty. Yeah. I don't remember what happened to Max. Did Max get a penalty in that race? Did not.
No.
No. Did not. Let's see, and Lewis did not get a penalty for the first lap incident either, did he? Or maybe it was after the race?
No, the steward said that there were too many things going on and it wasn't the first contact, because Stroll made contact with Alonso before Hamilton did. Alonso was saying, well, yeah, I was staying a little bit left because I could see you coming. That's what come to that. But I guess first corner.
Yeah, they're pretty lenient on, you know, they're pretty lap lenient. One, turn one.
I saw a lot on Reddit. I don't know if any of you have seen this, and I never really thought about it until I saw it on there. But a lot of people are complaining about a British bias with these penalties, that only the British drivers are not getting penalties during these moments, and then people from other countries are getting penalties.
Well, that's kind of what Fernando said. But what were they? One was from Singapore, one was from Bermuda. Or Barbados or something like that. Barbados, I think. So it wasn't like they were all British. No. Former British colonies, perhaps.
But interesting. I'd never really thought about it until this.
I don't know. I rate that like a 9 out of 10 on the conspiracies.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of those in this sport.
Hoffa is one of the stewards.
Yes. And then there wasn't really much else from this race. I guess there was another Lewis and Kevin incident again with Kevin blocking him. But at this moment, Yuki took huge advantage and broke super late and was able to get in between the two of them
which must have really pissed Lewis off. They didn't show any radio messages from him, but I can just imagine his demeanor at that moment when Yuki snuck in there and Kevin's doing all this crazy aggressive driving. And I think Kevin got another 10-second penalty for that.
Probably. Yeah. But it was great to see Yuki getting racy. I was starting to doubt Yuki a little bit last season. But this year, he's been epic. I mean, obviously, China was a blip. I think he's shown this weekend that China was a bit of a blip. He didn't really have a good outing there. But everything we've seen up until China, and then obviously this weekend as well, Yuki's proper after it. I think he's... You know, I think he's taking himself out of consideration for not being in a seat next year.
Yeah. I want to say that I always have been on the Yuki bandwagon and forever will be. But yeah, that was pretty much it. And so Lewis did get a penalty, just not for the lap one incident. He got a pit lane, speeding in the pit lane during the sprint race. I didn't even realize how...
They went through the pit lane
during the safety car.
During the safety car period, he fell back behind the car in front, fiddling with stuff on his wheel or something, and then accelerated to catch up, and he broke the speed limit.
Mm.
Although, quite why they don't have the speed limiter going just by
right
muscle memory when they're going down the pit lane, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's a bit of a silly penalty to pick up.
Yeah. It does it automatically in the video game, so I don't have to worry about that. You just drive as fast as you can into it, and it just slows you down right there.
Just like that.
But yeah, that was really it. So I guess Lewis finished like eighth, but he, because of that penalty, dropped down to 16th and out of the points. And Max wins another sprint race with Charles and Checo rounding out the podiums. But Danny was able to hold off Carlos for that whole time with Carlos having DRS behind him and stay in P4, which is an incredible race for him. Showing the Danny of old, whether he'll be able to, you know, keep this up on other tracks, we will see. But he needed that really badly if he has any shot of staying. And that is it for the sprint stuff. I mean, other than the Lewis and Kevin stuff, it was not really all that exciting for that race.
But I think one thing that came that you started seeing in the sprint race, which did carry forward into the Grand Prix as well, is that it wasn't just a DRS breeze down the long straight into turn 17 or whatever. There were some passes on the earlier DRS zone, which is a bit twistier and a bit more interesting, but it wasn't just DRS breeze by and then not, you know, drivers just waiting to get to that point and then overtaking. You did see some passes at different points in the circuit, which is good to see. I mean, if they've got the DRS tuned as it should.
Continue the conversation on pine-sports.com. That's pine-sports.com and the Pine Sports Discord, which you can find linked on the website. And join us in a one-of-a-kind fantasy Formula One contest at coopsf1.com. That's COOPSF1.com, where you can put your theories to the test.
So yeah, let's get into the qualifying for the Grand Prix. Danny obviously wanted to build off of what he did in the sprint race, but unfortunately he was not able to get out of Q1, which I'm sure he was super disappointed with that. Just was not able to put in a lap there to get him through. Let's see. Neither of the Aston Martins were able to get out of Q2. So they are not, I mean, Alonso has been the only one that's been able to do anything for them this season. And even now, this track just didn't really work that well for them.
Yeah, the Astons were an afterthought. I didn't even pay too much attention to them this race or this weekend, I felt like, other than the collision that happened. But right, it didn't seem like they were really involved. Or it's kind of felt like that way for the last few races, to be honest. Yeah.
They're just going through like this kind of the doldrums a little bit.
Yeah.
But I think it's really a case of, you know, just the competitive nature of those midfield teams, that your car's not quite on it and you're falling into the grasps of the RBs in this case, right? They've been looking pretty racy. And in some cases, the Haas, you know, the Haas is really, you know, moving forward. And it feels like Aston are just kind of falling out of touch with the top four now. It's not really a top four, it's top five anymore. It feels like it's sort of a top one and then a second two and then Mercedes, and Aston falling back into the clutches of RB and Haas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And let's see, Max took pole again with Charles behind him again on the front, or right on the front row with him. We've seen that quite a bit this season so far with those two on the front row.
Yeah. It was shaping up just to be more of the same that we've come to know and love for Formula One the last few years.
So might as well turn it now.
The nice thing was how close they were, at least this time. You know, they were a tenth apart, a little over a tenth apart. So it did seem like there was something to be, you know, looking for in the race.
Yeah. I mean, it does seem like the field is getting a little bit closer, even though Max is still so much farther ahead. It does seem like it's getting a little bit closer at this point. Pretty much everybody started the race on mediums, except for Lewis, Alonso, Kevin, and Danny on hard tires, and then Bottas on soft tires.
The strategy was supposed to be medium to hard or hard to medium, so I'm not quite sure what Bottas was doing.
Maybe they were, my philosophy there, and it's just come to my mind, right, was that maybe they were gambling on a safety car again on the first lap, and then they can just switch to the hards and run the entire race distance on hards, because the hards are pretty durable.
An early safety car, there's your pit stop and off you.
Yeah, try and pick up some places at the start. Although, if you were going to pit under a safety car, why would you bother picking up the spots? But there you go. I guess, you know, they're just got to try different stuff.
Yeah,
you know, when you're in the back of the grid,
when you're down there, why not?
Yeah.
And then a lot of the pre-race talk was talking about how Kevin's driving super aggressively and if it's too much. Obviously, in the sprint race, it probably was a little too much, but at least they're driving aggressively, you know?
I don't know. I like to see people race, and if they, you know. Yeah. But I think one of the things was he knew that he was going to get penalties for the driving that he was doing, but he was doing it anyway because he wasn't doing it for his own race. He was doing it for
he was helping his teammate, right?
The millions of dollars that they were getting for these points.
Yeah.
So, I think when I was reading stuff about the stewards and the unsportsmanlike, because there's been a bit of discussion on the socials and on some of the podcasts that I've listened to today about, you know, what do you draw the line at unsporting behavior? I think it came under intense discussion after, was it Lando backed up like 5 seconds, backed up the field so that they could double stack in a pit stop, and then he got spanked with an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty, and everyone was like, that's not it. Whatever unsportsmanlike is, isn't it? And so they decided they need to set a higher bar, and it's like, you have to know that you're doing something wrong. And I guess K-Mag knew he was doing something wrong, but didn't know that he wasn't allowed to do it. I don't know. It's a bit of a flimsy argument, to be honest with me. But, you know, it's like, I quite enjoyed watching them, even though they were running off the road and stuff, and he was picking up his penalties. It was an on-track battle, which is all we really want to see, right? Albeit a little bit close to the edges.
Yeah.
It was definitely entertaining.
It was entertaining, yeah.
You'd rather them take it a little bit too far than be totally like passive and not ever try, you know. The aggressiveness all the time. That was it for the pre-race stuff. Max gets another great start off the jump, but Checo broke crazy late and locked up a bit and almost crashed into the top three guys again. We almost had the same moment, just, you know, two rows up.
Dude, but how somehow, he didn't miss Max Verstappen. I mean, I've seen it a couple of times.
It looks Holy like crap. He actually hits him when they first showed that blimp or overhead replay. I'm like, oh, he did hit him. And then you're like, no, I guess he didn't. It was so close.
So close.
I think in the you couldn't really tell very well, because when they were in the cool down room and the drivers were chatting, they were showing Ted Kravitz talking to Andrea Stella or to Zach Brown or something. But I think you could see Max kind of seeing that on the screen and going, ooh. Like, he didn't know it happened. It was behind him and it just like, he didn't know it happened. And it's just like, Checo like a torpedo. I honestly, I've no idea how he didn't hit anyone at all.
He feels the same.
I mean, it really, I think it's best. I mean, he didn't manage to not take out Verstappen, but it messed up Sainz the most, because Sainz was lining up to take second, right? And he had to like touch the brakes as even more as
I mean, he saw him coming and stayed out,
which gave Leclerc the chance to go back up into second, and
because he had a horrible start
position to Piastri, I think.
Charles had a really bad start.
He did,
but because of all of that happening, it meant that he retained it. And then,
and then
Oscar came up into three, right?
Yeah, exactly. It should. Yep. I mean, if it weren't for Perez steaming down the inside, I think it would have been Sainz in second, Perez in third. Oh no, sorry, Leclerc in third. Leclerc could have even
I was going to say, Leclerc could have even gone further back.
He could have been down in fifth.
But that also, you know, Checo dropped back because of that. And at least he wasn't able to put any pressure on the Ferraris. He was already too far behind them, and he had Lando right on his tail. So he couldn't even be aggressive because he had to defend Lando behind him instead of pushing forward.
I can't believe Checo made it back onto the track. I mean, he just completely dove right back onto the race line.
He almost took out other cars coming back.
He took Lando out, I think.
Because
it was Lando that he came out in front of.
Yeah.
But I lost sight of him. He kind of went off there, and I didn't even see where he was until like way after.
Yeah. But like you said, Oscar had a great start as well, moving up three places and up to P3 in the first lap. And the Alpines had some crazy aggressive driving. I mean, we've seen it from these two so many times, and going side by side through all those slow turns. No one ever thought that you'd be able to do that. And somehow they didn't crash into each other this time.
That was crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, good racing, I guess, you know, good on them for keeping it clean through there, but I was hitting for the accident. Yeah,
exactly. Everybody was just like, how did they not crash? You fully expected them to hit.
Yeah, but somehow they were able to not do that. And Pierre was able to get ahead in the end. Max started pulling away from Charles fairly early on lap four. He's already got a 2-second gap over Charles in P2. And Oscar is staying right on the tail of Charles. So he's really having to defend instead of trying to push forward as well. And then by the end of lap four down the long straight, Oscar was able to get on the inside of Charles in that last turn and take P2 from him. Oscar was looking very good early on in the race.
Excuse me, Jason. It looked more like Charles was happy to give the place up just to set things
Charles
straight.
Charles gave him a lot of space. He didn't fight. They both sort of gave each other a lot of space. It was
After you. No, after you.
It was very much like that. Yeah.
I don't think Oscar was saying after you. He was saying thank you very much. It just went right through.
He did have pace, though. But it seemed like Charles strategically was happy to let that happen.
I was
wondering, you know, at that point, like, this
idiot, some damage or something.
Yeah, like, what's happening? That was a little too easy, considering how early in the race it was. But with the tire deg at this track, you would think it was worth the risk, right?
Yeah, no, it definitely looked like Charles was getting a little bit of tire wear,
yeah,
particularly like on the rears. And you know, Oscar's not really been the best at preserving his tires. So I think there may have just been a little bit in Charles' mind. It's like, well, I'm not going to cook my tires defending. Let this guy who's not very good on his tires burn his tires up and I'll get him back later. But then a couple of laps later, you started seeing Charles getting a little squirrely at the back end. And then Carlos was coming up saying that, you know, he'd got a bit more pace and, you know, maybe it was Charles's tires and Charles didn't have the pace after all.
Yeah. And then a few laps later, we see Lewis is making up spots. He's up into P7 and he looks like he's taken Nico, but he locks up and Nico is able to take the spot back, being crazy aggressive again. I mean, just
those darn both Haas drivers.
Doing whatever they need to do to get as many points as they can, I guess. But very bold from Nico there. And then lap 9, I guess, is when we hear Carlos on the radio saying, look, I am faster than Charles. Let me go through. But they never did that, right?
Leclerc put in the fastest lap right after that, I think. So he heard it or they didn't share it, but he responded. It wasn't that clear cut. I think it's classic Formula One race. Whenever you're behind your teammate, you just press the button and say, I'm faster, let me through. You've got to give it a shot.
Yeah.
Are you even trying if you're not doing that?
Yeah. And then Lewis finally was able to take the spot back from Nico to stay in P7 for the moment. And then just a couple laps later, George passed Nico again. So the Mercedes were moving up. And then, so I guess Nico was the first of the top 10 drivers to come in. And then on lap 14, Lando is right behind Checo going down long straight, but he wasn't able to get ahead of Checo at first. Like you said, the DRS has not been as powerful on that back straight, and you really had to be really close on the exit of the beginning of the straight or the exit of the turn before that to really have a chance of making that pass.
Let's see. I mean, the Red Bulls were quick down the straight, like some free practice one. They were, I think, the fastest. They must have put on more downforce as the weekend went on because they got a little bit slower, but they were quick down the straights. They showed that actually, I think, Charles versus Max's qualifying lap. And every time they would get to the straights, the Red Bull, you'd see like the overlay just pulling away from even Ferrari, who was already quick down the straights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we saw,
because you can use DRS at any point in the DRS zones in qualifying, right? And we know how strong that Red Bull is with the DRS. Maybe that's got a bit to something to do with it, but that, you know, you'd thought that Checo, if that was truly the case, that the DRS on the Red Bull was like super effective and gave them tons more speed, that Checo would be making moves forward, but he wasn't. So I don't know, just maybe like to your point, there's some twisty sections and some not so twisty sections, and you've just got to kind of make that trade-off and decide how much downforce you're going to put on.
Yeah. And then we saw Ferrari do kind of a dummy pit stop, but Charles was already past the line. Both the Ferraris were already past the pit entry, so the dummy was obviously not going to work.
The dummy was the dummy.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, Ferrari's done this so many times, right? How many times? Like, are they the only team that really tries this dummy pit stop thing, and it never seems to do anything?
I think there's rules about you not even doing that. If you can't have people coming out into the pit lane and then bringing them back in, and you know, it's a dangerous area. A lot of people running around, cars coming through. So you can't.
Well, I think Ferrari always used to fall for it. And so now they try it and no one else falls for it. So.
maybe.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. There is no evidence to back up that statement whatsoever.
But you're probably right. But Oscar was able, he wasn't gaining on Max, but he was able to keep a very similar lap time to him behind, showing that, you know, early on the McLarens had at least similar pace to the Red Bulls,
which is crazy. Oscar having no upgrades,
He had
half upgrades, I think. Right?
Oh, he had the okay half.
Yeah, he's got a small package.
Lambda's got a massive package. Fair point.
That's hilarious. let's see. So Checo coming into the pits on lap 18 from P5. I mean, Lando is right behind him at this point. It was looking like, you know, probably on the next lap he might be able to get by him, but Checo dove into the pits to avoid that. And then Carlos dropped back from Charles a bit. They're talking about on the broadcast, maybe they're just trying to conserve the tires to stretch it out a bit, or maybe he just, you know, didn't have the pace anymore. He didn't really hear much from the team, at least no radio messages or anything.
Yeah. One radio message that did come on, and I was watching it with my little guy, and I said to him how much I really liked this radio message. It was to Lando, because they came on the radio and said, "We're not going to try and cover Checo. Go get Carlos."
Yeah,
and it's like, right. Yes, good, because at that point you'd seen the pace that Lando had, and he managed to. You could see he was saving tires as he was trying to, you know, keep up and trying to get past Checo, but not overdoing it. And so then, when you heard the call to get after Carlos, it was like, yes, they're playing it aggressive.
Yeah. And that was like the first time where I realized, not that Lando was going to win, but I was like, oh, wow. Like, there's something going on here, because
they know the cars.
You know, how many laps are we into the race? We got leaders already pitting and tire deg taking over. And he suddenly gets in a clean air and is just taking off. And so, yeah, I think that was the first real moment that there was a statement put out there of what McLaren had this weekend.
I can't even stop smiling when you're saying that. Wow. Okay. But yeah, like you said, then Charles came into pit after that. So we saw the guys ahead of them. The deg is affecting their tires and they're having to come in, but the McLarens are staying out.
Charles pitting at that point. I was actually pretty impressed based on, you know, he must have been pretty aggressive in the beginning of the race, trying to stay ahead of Oscar and everything going on, and Carlos on his butt. I was pretty shocked that Leclerc made his tires last as long as they did and was able to hold pace and then was pulling away from Carlos. He was, a couple seconds ahead of Carlos, I think, at that point. Broke DRS. So, yeah, with all the tire deg, we know there was tire deg, but at the same time, there was just the opposite results kind of coming out in some instances, which was interesting.
Yeah. And then shortly after that, Max hit the cone on the chicane, which brought out, it took them a while for them to bring it out, the virtual safety car. The cone was like right off of the racing line. It was moving quite a bit. I was surprised it took them so long to bring it out. And then it only lasted for half a lap. So half of the cars weren't even able to use it. It looked like Max was attempting to benefit from the virtual safety car, but it came in right before he came into the pits.
Yeah, because the gap in the field was between Bottas and Verstappen. So that was by virtue of where it was always going to be that Verstappen was never going to be anywhere close to the pit when they called out the virtual safety car, because as soon as Bottas went by, the virtual safety car to slow everyone down and give the guy enough time to jump out and then get the stuff and then jump back. One thing I did see on the footage, the first marshal jumped over, he picked up the stuff and he was running back, and then inexplicably another marshal jumped into the track. I don't quite know why, like he was going to give him his buddy a boost to get in, but as he jumped over, his phone fell out his pocket onto the track. And then they cut away to a pit stop or something. But it was I was like, oh, I'd love to see them scrambling around or not notice that his phone's there and he gets taken out by a car. But that was really kind of amusing. I spotted that on the broadcast.
Well, I was very grateful and very happy that the virtual safety car came out when it did, because Charles was, I think, the only leader to have pit at that point, and he would have been just destroyed if they pulled it out and let everybody else at the lead pit. So I was happy that it worked out that way. It kind of kept things relatively even for the leaders.
It meant that people were a little closer behind him, but they weren't in front of him.
Right.
Yeah. And then, so we had Zach Brown on, was the team principal that was being interviewed during the race this weekend on Sky. And so they were asking him pretty much about, you know, the pace. Are they going to keep him out? And he was like, yeah, we're going to keep him out as long as he can because he's driving fast enough. And that was all he was willing to say. But style, like, you know, you can see the smirk on his face that they were pretty confident that they had a very fast car. And I had a real shot at this. Let's see. And then Lewis came into pit shortly after that, lap 27. Oscar and Carlos came into pit on the next lap from, I guess they were the first two cars at that instant, because Max and Checo and Charles had already come in.
Yeah, so the non-front runners had all come in during the virtual safety car. Yeah. And then Max came in just straight away after. I guess he was pushing hard because he was going to come into the pits anyway. And once he'd missed out on the VSC, he just still pit anyway. Oscar and Carlos decided they're going to do a try and, you know, see if they could make the tires last a little bit more. And I don't know. I don't know how strong or weak the undercut was here, but it felt like the tires weren't really degrading too badly, and they could try and see if they could overcut maybe and come in a bit later. But they came out and they were pretty much as they were.
Well, I think this is also where Lando and Oscar, I think after they cooled their tires down at VSC, they were like setting fastest laps for the next like three, four, five laps, I think, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And then you heard Max complaining about the hard tires. He was having a really hard time with the hard tires during this race, just having any sort of traction. And let's see, this is the moment where Kevin and Logan both go off the track. I don't even remember exactly what happened, but I'm pretty sure it was a Kevin being overly aggressive moment, was it not?
Yeah, it was first corner.
They were fighting with each other into the first corner. They sort of switched positions, but then it was into the second corner that I don't think Logan realized that Magnussen was still there on his inside, and they just...
That's right.
They just came
Magnussen
back
cut
again
to the inside. So Magnussen was trying to get around the outside of Logan in turn one and then kind of cut around behind and got a good exit, a way better exit than I guess Logan was anticipating, and just didn't see that he was there. And K-Mag, being K-Mag, just seeing that the gap was shrinking, He could have cut the corner, but he didn't. He just kept moving wide.
I guess that's true.
All those times he cut corners, and then this time he doesn't.
I mean, as usual, especially when your front wheels and your back wheels come together like that, not bashing side on, but when the actual tread touches, it flips the car around so easily.
Right. Yeah.
That was
the end of Logan's day. And they're probably going 150 miles an hour there.
Safety car.
And another penalty for Magnussen.
Yep.
This has been an all-time weekend for penalties
has
for one
Magnussen
driver. I have
yet?
Never seen this kind of...
Has he? Ocon.
Yeah, exactly.
Ocon had a similar race last year, right? Where he had like two or three penalties in a weekend, but...
Yeah.
Yeesh. Not good. And then obviously it brought out the safety car, and to the benefit of Lando, he was able to come in under the safety car, the only of the top drivers in the field to really benefit from this. Checo came in for a second pit stop, which was kind of weird.
Yeah.
He put the media
on.
I was there thinking, wow, Checo's got the mediums on. At that point, he was in sixth, I think.
Yeah,
sixth,
like that.
Battling with Lewis. And I thought, oh, maybe that's the call. The safety car, Bert Mylander, you know, went into autopilot, I guess, and picked up Verstappen instead of instead of Lando as the leader.
He's like, oh, there's the car I need. That's it's always
there's the, yeah. one. The yellow nose.
Nobody
on the
else
front.
Is leaving.
There he is.
So it was weird. I mean, at one point it looked like they were just going to let Lando just catch up with the back, and they got like a whole lap. But then they started releasing the cars, and I thought at that point there was enough gap that Lando could have come back in and put mediums on, you know, and then had the, had the tire advantage over.
Oh, what? Do two,
Max.
Do two?
Yeah,
pit
do two.
Stops?
Just pit, put the hard on, come back round because everyone's behind the safety car, and stick the mediums on.
We were looking at
Max would have done.
That's
last.
A pretty good point.
That's yeah. because,
right.
But I don't know what do you know what the gap was? That's a very good
I
point.
I think it was like 33 I mean, seconds when at that one point.
Wow.
But then once they started releasing cars, I don't know. But at that point, I was thinking, well, I give it a whirl. Because I was, of course, always thinking about, well, what's Max going to do on Lando when they, at the restart? Yeah, Lando's got fresher tires, but behind the safety car, they're going to get up to upper temperature.
Yeah.
And then being in a Red Bull with their DRS, like I was saying earlier, did Lando stand a chance once DRS kicked in?
Right
off the restart to be able to be in with a chance of the win.
Yeah, I don't. Just say what you said again, there, Nick. Though you said he could have done a pit stop.
He could have done a pit stop because the safety car had picked up Verstappen.
Right,
and so Lando was actually half a lap ahead at one point before they started releasing the cars from behind the safety car.
Right,
so
because he was the
depending on the timing
leader.
After he had already pitted,
pitted, he came out well ahead because the safety car had already picked up the pack, and Lando came out and he was like half a lap ahead.
He would still end up behind the safety car.
He would, but his gap was big. It might have been. I'll have to go watch, but his gap might have been big enough
that he could
even after pitting
still come out.
Because remember that was where we went. They let Lando go. He drove at a much quicker speed than everybody queued up behind the safety car, and then they finally released him. But he pitted and came out way ahead of everybody. So yeah, he might have been able to do another lap and throw on the mediums. That's not a bad point.
That's crazy,
but we will see that it did not matter.
But also, I did see that someone there was talk about was it Bottas or someone or anyway someone talking about. A pit infringement under safety car. I don't know whether that was the same time or whether they closed the safety car, closed the pit lane after.
Briefly, I don't think anything ever came of that. They did mention it on the, Did Bottas pick up a penalty?
Well, I think so. Somebody changed their wing under the safety car, which apparently you're not able to do.
Magnussen, obviously.
Maybe, yeah. So the safety car came in on lap 33, and it was pretty close at the restart. It looked like Lando maybe even like kind of started going and then stopped again and then went going again because Max was pretty close to him at first. But he was able to pull away fairly after a couple turns. I mean, he was able to build a gap. He obviously had a full lap to go with the restart. The DRS comes on the next lap. It's not two laps anymore.
So then on the next lap, Max blows by on DRS and goes ahead and wins the race. Thanks, everybody.
No. Let's see. So Carlos looks like he was almost going to pass Oscar, but Oscar broke super late, but ended up, going off the track, and Carlos was able to get in front of him again. And then Lando was just pulling away. I mean, we're only so seven laps in, he's got a three second lead over Max and gaining, when's the last time we've seen that?
We haven't. But it was like that first lap, because obviously, you know, Max made a real run at the first corner to try and get it, made a good go, but Lando managed to stay ahead. But then it was all about building up, you know, making sure you were a second ahead by the time the DRS came on. As it was, he was like 1.3, 1.4. He'd really put the hammer down those two laps and got ahead so that Max never really got a DRS opportunity. And all he needed to do from that point on was just keep that gap.
Yeah.
And Max even tried to do, you know, like he did in Abu Dhabi, where he goes not behind the car in front of him for the restart, but like next to him and almost up to where he was, but not quite, you know, right next to him. But Lando's seen that many times before, and he was able to kind of just like move over a bit and make Max have to get behind him and just pull forward. So that was amazing. And then we didn't see anything for a little bit.
Point was it where Oscar was, he lost like three spots in a few corners. He, you know, he got out of his rhythm.
Lap and 40. Yeah, Carlos broke too late at the end of the straight and hit Oscar, which gave him damage.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it was damage that they discovered was why he started dropping back, right?
Well, yeah. Piastri, yeah. And then he broke his front wing. Yeah, the front wing, as Carlos came across in front of Oscar, Carlos's back wheels ran into the end plate.
Yeah, he just locked up the rears a little
Piastri
bit.
And no bits actually came off, but they all just disconnected from the end plate, and it was just the front wing just didn't work anymore.
Yeah, so, really unfortunate for Oscar, because he was having an amazing race too. Obviously, you know, spent a lot of the first part of the race in the top three spots. So that was super unfortunate for Oscar. Let's see. We saw Alonso make a pass on Ocon, seeing the old Alpine teammates battling out for a little bit. And Lando's pulling away even more, lap 49, and he's got a 5.5 second lead from Max. I mean, it's a 57. This was the point in the race where I was texting everybody I knew that was F1 fans, and I was like, he has to fuck this up to not win this race at this point.
What did all three people respond?
Most of them didn't even respond. They didn't want to hear all the shit that I had to
too busy watching the race.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see. And then we saw Oscar and Danny racing tight, the two Australians, but they were all the way in the back. So, oh, right. And then we heard Oscar's engineer on the radio say, Lando is leading the race. Don't crash.
Yes, don't cause.
We don't want a safety
car. Yeah. Don't need a safety car right now.
Yeah.
And Oscar's probably like, yeah, good point.
Yeah,
Oscar was putting in really fast laps, though. He was
did he finish with the fastest lap?
Yeah, he did. He ended up with the fastest lap. Yeah, he put the hammer down.
Yeah, and I guess that was really it. Lando wins his first race.
Everybody liked that. I don't think there was one. There's not one driver, you know, that wasn't smiling and happy for him. It was 100% well received.
Max doesn't smile that much for his own wins.
No. he seems happier for Lando than he was. I mean, not to put a dampener on it, but Red Bull did come out and say that Max's car was damaged. The floor was damaged by going over the bollard. I mean, how much that compromised his aero and, you know, blah, blah, blah. What do we
sure?
No, but yeah, every driver that passed him on the track on the cool down lap was giving him a wave and a thumbs up.
Yeah, it was great.
A clap and
Like Lewis practically stopped in the middle of the track on the cool down lap just to make sure Lando could see him when he gave, you know, the applause in the car. But it was really cool. Like everybody went out of their way to find him at the end and congratulate him. So that was great.
Yeah, and he did.
I thought it was also cool to see like the podium finishers being Norris, Verstappen, and Leclerc, who all kind of came up at the same time, like big names at big teams. You know, I think that's what we've all been hoping for since those guys came up, like to have these three guys just battling it out. Not that it was a true battle on track for this race, but just cool to see them all.
For those three guys in the top three teams right now, Mercedes aren't up there, but battling it out and having someone else win. I just want to be able to see like any one of those three win on any given day based on anything other than the fact that one's in a Red Bull and the others are playing matchup.
Yeah. I'd like to see two of those three win every single day. but I guess we didn't mention, this is probably the wrong time, we should have talked about it earlier, but we obviously got the news about Adrian Newey leaving
right
Red Bull, and a lot of people talking about maybe this is the reason Red Bull didn't have that great of a weekend. They've had all this cloud hanging over them, and Adrian, you know, decided to leave, and everyone's talking about them going to Ferrari.
Yeah, but it's like the articles most recently are really basically saying that Red Bull are just imploding right now.
That's definitely going to be, that's the story that people want to write, right? When yeah. this weekend is right. going to be the first big indication of it, and that it will then continue. But we will see. Yeah. Will it continue? Won't it?
I don't know. You know. But
watch this turn into a fight for the
championship. Yeah, but heading into the weekend, they were talking about Jonathan Wheatley, the team manager, I guess, being the next one out the door. Jonathan Cheatley is how we all lovingly know. He's the guy who was on with Michael Massey saying, we just need one lap, Michael.
Right.
Get this thing started so that we can overtake Lewis and, you know.
Right.
That.
So that nonsense.
I hope he leaves.
Yeah. So I guess we should talk about the winners and losers. Obviously, Lando is a winner on the weekend. big surprise. I mean, Danny did not have a great feature race, but the sprint race was amazing. Yuki scoring points again in the feature race. V-carb, or however you want to call them, RB, they're looking like the sixth team
really good. They are looking good.
You know, that's kind of what we were expecting coming out of testing, but then it wasn't happening, but they're kind of showing that they are, you know, at least right now in that spot. I mean, Charles obviously had a pretty, you know, a decent race. I mean, he finished on the podium. He's been on the podium.
Yeah, solid, consistent.
Like the last four races.
Yeah. I mean, I think he had a decent race. He wasn't quite quick enough to challenge, and he was quicker than the cars behind him.
Yeah.
So,
well, after a really rough FP1 for him, only getting in one timed lap, that was definitely a nice result to see come out of him.
That crazy spin that somehow didn't touch any of the walls in that really tight, skinny section. Yeah.
Which, another mistake by him.
So I didn't actually see what happened. I just saw his car was there and he was walking away from it.
He spun, burned the clutch out, practice session over. So he got in all of one timed lap. But I guess took Carlos's setup and made it work very nicely.
But the track was dead. They'd red flagged the session at that point. So he didn't get a 25,000 euro fine like Lando did after the sprint for walking across the track.
He did stop all of traffic, though. I mean, there was a huge backup. Lewis was the first one right there, but he was able to still have a good weekend regardless of that. And I guess you can give Ocon a winner of the day. They got their first point of the season. You know, that's something. Yeah. I guess
they managed to make the Alpine car a little bit lighter. I think that was the thing they were struggling with this season. It's a heavy car. So the good thing about upgrades that don't really do anything to anything other than making the car lighter are guaranteed to give you results. So, good result for Ocon. I'd also say Oscar was a winner on the day. I think he had a great drive. He didn't have the full package of upgrades that that Lando did. And he was holding his own. I mean, obviously he got that damage and started falling back and then had to pit for that front wing, but he was well up there. He was having a great race, but then obviously that little bit of contact kind of destroyed his race. But I don't think that keeps him off the winner list. I thought he was really good this weekend.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Those two McLaren drivers, they can't wait to get to Imola. They're just chomping at the bits to get back in the car, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully they are able to keep it going. And then losers on the weekend, I mean, I guess you... Even though they had P2 and P4, I guess you put Red Bull as a loser in this situation. I mean,
they didn't win. Both their cars finished and they didn't win. So,
it's not a win.
That's how good they are.
I think Max will take it. He's in it for the long haul. He doesn't need to break anymore. He holds all the records now. Yeah. So, this doesn't hurt him in the championship, I don't think. Second.
No.
Yeah.
And Mercedes, I mean, they're not considered the, it's not the top four anymore. It's like the top three, and then Mercedes and Aston are in their own section, although Aston had a pretty awful weekend themselves. At least Mercedes was able to be in the points, but super disappointing from them. Yeah. And then I guess Sauber and Williams, but
yeah,
what's new?
Sauber didn't do anything. Williams, yeah, I mean, they were last on the road. That was just was it last lap or penultimate lap lockup by Alex Albon, took him straight on, and then he had to turn around and come back, and by then whoever was behind him had gone by. So yeah. End of not a great weekend for Williams.
Yeah. Then Mark astutely added, the F1 fans are definitely winners on on the weekend. Because
would it be a bit too mean to call Hulkenberg a loser because he now holds the record for the most Grand Prix without a win at 209, overtaking Andrea De Cesaris from who had it at 208 before? I mean, it's not going to happen.
No, well, it's clearly not a loser on the week, I suppose, because yeah, he is the driver with the most starts without a win, but he's signed up for at least another 2 years with the Works Audi team. So not that we think that that's going to immediately put him in chances for a podium, but you know, it means that it's going to go up to 260.
Wow. Yeah.
I guess
could be. Yeah, he's
and that record would surely never be broken.
Do you think that because they announced the Nico news so early that Carlos has a spot for next year already kind of figured out? Because those were kind of the two names that they were really looking at. And Nico was kind of the B option to, they wanted Carlos in the team. And they announced, you think they're still going to try and get both?
Yeah. Yeah. They're going to try and get Carlos. It's going to be interesting because, well, the big talk was that Verstappen was going to have a meeting with Mercedes this week. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Verstappen staying with Red Bull. That's just how it's going to be. But you think he'll leave Red Bull?
I mean, with Adrian leaving, isn't that like the part of his contract that says like if one of three key Marco. People leave?
I think it's just
Helmut. Only Helmut.
Yeah.
Wow. Obviously, we've seen that there are all these little fine things in their contracts that they're able to get out of things like Lewis did for next year. But that would be fascinating if that did happen. I'll just say that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see where people go. You know, yeah. I think Bottas at this point now realizes with that signing of Hulkenberg that he's going to have to put himself on the market a little bit and go talking to some teams.
He might be the odd one out. Right now, like if it happened today and everyone had to decide, he potentially could be the odd man out.
Yeah. There's Aseda Haas, Ollie Behrman probably, but K-Mag, is he a guarantee for next year? I don't know. Is Bottas a better option than him? I don't know. I think both the Alpines are out of contract at the end of the year, so if that car's not looking any better, they may start looking around to see what's open, which might open up there. Williams has a seat.
Well, yeah.
If Antonelli doesn't take it.
I mean, they're talking about maybe him just, if the Max thing doesn't happen, he might just go straight to Mercedes. Who knows?
Yeah.
All right. And I guess we should talk about Coops F1. I made it out of I'm in the top 200 now.
I mean, you're looking at the positives. Top scorer this week, Wesley Crocker, 270 points. I mean, very few people. I'd have to look at the stats. I don't know how many people put Lando as the winner. But he had Max and Lando 1 and 2. Obviously, he got them around the wrong way, but everybody else behind in the correct at the correct spot in the top five. Let's see. And then for the
Mark, you're in top 15, right? Top 14.
Yeah. You're just every week you get better and better, Mark.
Climbing.
15th right now, up 8 points.
Nice.
But yeah, R. Heatley holds on to the to the top spot this week, only 2 points ahead of Jonathan. I think, yeah, Nick, you went up a spot.
To 78th or something.
So, yeah, hanging around in the 70s. Not looking so good for me. 132nd.
I'd take that.
And, yeah, Jay Lazzy. Hey, up 16 points, though, Jason. Up 16 points. But yeah.
How's Ma Cooper doing? I'm not seeing her on here.
She is...
she's below you now. Right below Max.
141st, yeah.
Right behind Max for strap-on.
Yeah, I don't really have good checks for the names.
Like, sorry, Mark Cooper, about that.
Oh dear. But yeah, what is it, 2 weeks until
Imola,
which got rained out last year, right? They just canceled.
That's right.
Yeah.
So
that's where we got the pictures of Yuki bucketing all the water out of all the local shops and in the town there.
All right.
Well, that'll be exciting to have that race again. I mean, it's not really a passing track, is it? It's more like kind of tight.
More so than Miami, but yeah. I mean, I think this is Lando winning has definitely reignited people's excitement for Formula One, right? It's not just, oh, Max won again. So I think people are more interested to see what we're going to get next time.
I mean,
so
At this point, last year, we had only Red Bull winners, and Checo had only won. He won two of the first three races and then didn't win anything again, right?
That was it. So, yeah. And you know,
so we've had two non-Red Bull winners so far this season.
Yeah.
And so we have some very different tracks coming up. You know, Imola's got a really long straight, so high, low downforce or, you know, high speed cars will do well, but then Monaco and then back to a Monza type track at Canada.
Yeah.
Which Jason will be at.
Are you going? Are you going, Jason?
We'll see if I have to buy a new computer or not, but yeah.
Subscribers, you need to send in more donations.
Yeah. Right. Send me to Montreal.
Yeah.
I was, so obviously Imola 30 years ago last Wednesday was the site of Ayrton Senna's accident. On last Wednesday, I went to an event that was held in Charlotte, like honoring Senna. It was hosted by Jason. You probably don't know him because he was a guy who did the F1 broadcasts before we went to Sky, a guy called Steve Matchett. I know, Martin, do you remember Steve Matchett?
I remember him, yeah.
Yeah, so
back
in the day, it was NBC and Speed before that.
Speed.
And it was David Hobbs, Bob Varsha, and Steve Matchett, and Will Buxton. Will Buxton started there before he went on to F1 TV. But Steve Matchett lives just up the road. And so he was hosting this event where he kind of read like a story that he'd written about his, you know, his last experience in Brazil and, you know, Senna type stuff. It was kind of cool, but there was a ton of like F1 folks, F1 fans there. So I was bigging up our podcast and telling people where to find us, where they regularly get their podcasts. So welcome to any of the new listeners from that particular event. It was good. Steve Matchett, thoroughly nice bloke. We were chatting for about 20 minutes.
That's cool.
And, that is cool.
Yeah, it was a really cool venue here in Charlotte. It's called Unknown. Basically, it's a car geek's paradise. They've got like cars there. They've got, you know, it's a dealership. It's a car storage place. So we went downstairs and there's all sorts of really cool cars from, you know,
it's cool,
full spec rally cars to Aston Martins to single seater racers to Porsches, Ferraris, Lamborghinis, everything in between. And Steve Matchett had a couple of his World War II Jeeps there as well that he keeps there.
That's cool.
So, and then they got like, it's also like a shared workplace and they got podcast studios and all sorts of stuff. It's really, really kind of cool place.
That is cool. I guess this probably won't make it into the episode, but did you guys see all the Penske stuff from IndyCar?
With the software?
So they have a kind of push to pass yeah. is what they call it. Yeah. It's not supposed to work on the first lap, but apparently they had one race that was at this, like, it's like a country club, but for race car fans, essentially. Yeah. And there's like a track. It began with a B. I can't remember what it was called. But anyway, so during that race, it wasn't for the championship. There were no points available for the race. So they were able to use the push to pass on the first lap for that race. So I guess they changed their software so that they could have it for that race. But for whatever reason, the Penske cars claimed, or Joseph Newgarden claimed, that he thought that was a new rule for the sport. But no one else seemed to think that. So during the first race of the season, they were using push to pass on the first lap of the race when they weren't supposed to. And so Joseph Newgarden, who is a two-time IndyCar champion,
he just won the 500, right?
Indy 500 last year. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he lost his race win from the first one. What's the other guy's name? Will Power didn't use it because he understood the rules, but the software was still wrong. He still had the ability to, so he lost points. And then Scott McLaughlin also lost his position. So they dropped from like first and third and fifth in the championships all the way down to the bottom, essentially. Wow. And there's been people all through motorsport talking about this. So, like, is this possible for other sports to be able to do this? I don't think that F1 would be able to get away with that with all the information that we get back from
The only thing that gets turned on and off centrally for Formula One cars is DRS, but it's very obvious when that is being deployed or not. So,
yeah,
not so much when
they can just use the energy recovery whenever they want. It's just
maybe
it has a certain range that it can operate. Right. You know, you got to charge it up and use it. So,
yeah,
I think it's a little bit different,
but pretty crazy.
Yeah. Thermal is the name of that
thermal
country
thermal.
Club. Yeah.
Thanks for listening to the Undercuts review of the 2024 Miami Grand Prix. Join us next time where we'll review the 2024 Imola Grand Prix. Thanks again.